And rulemaking options and possible timeline for motorized mineral prospecting methods, briefing, public hearing, and possible decision. And we do have public that wish to comment. So, Randy, and I guess you're the first lead on this one. Good job.
Good morning. I'm Randy Thurston. I'm the Protection Division Manager in the Habitat Program. I'm here with Jeff Davis, the Assistant Director in the Habitat Program. We're here because you've requested an additional briefing and public input on the mineral prospecting rules. So we're here today to try to build on and not repeat the information that we presented in February. Our presentation today, I'll cover our current practices, what's going on in the other states, enforceability of our current regulations, the threat of aquatic invasive species, rulemaking options, and the rulemaking timeline. So our current practices, right now we believe that a majority of the miners are using our Golden Fish pamphlet. Since 2014, we have only issued 244 exceptions to the pamphlet, and these are individual HPAs that were issued. Because an application is not required for the Golden Fish pamphlet, we don't know how many miners use the pamphlet or where they're specifically mining. We do have a general idea, however, because we know where the club claims are. We also know where the placer deposits have been mapped. We also have authorized work windows, so we know when the work can occur. One thing to note is that we've only issued three individual HPAs to out-of-state folks, so we don't have any idea of how many folks are coming in from out-of-state and using the pamphlet at this time. So there's been a lot of discussion about what's going on in the other states around us in terms of in terms of section dredging. So in California, there was litigation, and as a settlement, they placed a moratorium on section dredging, and that was in 2009. And they asked both the California Department of Fish and Wildlife and the water boards to update their rules. California Fish and Wildlife has done that rulemaking and updated their rules. The water boards are still in the process of doing that, and it appears that they'll be done by the end of the year is what we've seen in some recent publications. But again, that moratorium is still in effect and has been in effect for almost a decade. In Oregon, when the moratorium went in effect in California in 2009, they saw an increase of mineral prospectors coming in into their state, miners. And they actually saw almost a threefold increase. So it went from around 800, they went from around issuing about 800 permits to about 2,400 permits a year. So they initiated rulemaking in 2012, and in their essential salmon habitat waters, at that time they said, okay, we're going to limit the number of permits to 850. And then in 2018, they actually had legislation that went in effect to prohibit section dredging in essential fish salmon habitat waters, and that is a state designation that they have.
Could you define what that definition is for essential salmon habitat, or how they define it?
I don't have the wording exactly in front of me. I know it's I believe it includes their native spawning areas for their natives and anadromous salmonids and rearing areas. And they also have some language where they've included lamprey in that, in the legislation. So it goes a little bit beyond.
It's inclusive.
It is. Yeah, it is. And in Oregon, water quality permit coverage is also required. So in Idaho, it's a little bit different. the section judging regulations, recent regulations, weren't really triggered by a legislation. They were triggered by actions on U.S. Forest Service and BLM lands, where there was a federal nexus to get the services involved in a review. And so most of the regulation changes have come as a result of that review by the federal government. And so those restrictions, they do restrict work in ESA-listed waters. They have been, through consultation, taking some of the streams off of that list, but it's pretty it is pretty restrictive right now. EPA also issues a water quality permit in the state of Idaho. So is there any questions about the states before I move on? I figure there, I could tell there might be.
So just to be clear, California's in the process, and looks like water quality will be part of the monitoring and requirements. Oregon and Idaho water quality is considered. So in this state, do you want to... say anything about whether water quality is taken into consideration?
Yeah, so currently in this state, water quality is taken into consideration in as much as we can do so under the hydraulic code. It's very limited. Really, Department of Ecology has the authority in this state to implement the Clean Water Act, and they are currently are not taking an active role in prospecting permitting or mining permitting. So that's kind of where we're at right now. There and the feds on federal land haven't initiated any federal actions that would bring in the services, for example. So would you have another? Okay. Yeah. Okay.
So I think at the last commission meeting, you all asked the director to get together with Department of Ecology and have a conversation because Ecology had rejected a petition for NPDES permit for this activity before, and so Director Storr did follow up on that, and we do have a meeting with their water quality lead. I think it's next week. She and I are sitting down to have a conversation about, you know, what we're worried about, what they're considering in all of this, and seeing if there's a pathway forward.
Thank you.
So we were also asked to speak to enforceability. Because the Golden Fish pamphlet is a type of permit, the same enforcement tools as we have for the other, for the standard HPAs apply to the pamphlet. So we do have a civil and criminal pathway. We do some emphasis patrols. Fish and Wildlife does do some emphasis patrols in the areas where we know that the prospectors are likely to be working, where we know there's club claims or there's placer deposits mapped. And often that they have a biologist that accompanies them with on those emphasis patrols. But the other thing is some of our individual HPAs, the 244 that I mentioned, they do require a notification, the prospector or the miner to notify us before work starts. And that allows us to know exactly when and where they're working. But that's we don't do that universally. I don't know if you want to say any more about enforcement. Okay.
Maybe just one thing.
Okay.
So this isn't necessarily specific to mineral prospecting, but this the enforcement of or compliance with HPAs has been something we've been working at for a long time. And so... this isn't, I feel like in the hearing that you heard, for the most part, the folks that are working on the claims and the clubs, I think they do a pretty good job of policing their own, and they're only out there certain times. And so we like all of our other hydraulic project approvals, have compliance issues. And even when enforcement is able to build a solid case, we have a really tough time with local prosecution. And so we've been working, as you all know, on the civil side of this. But it is a pretty glaring risk to fish protection.
So currently, prospectors move their equipment throughout the state. And we also assume that there are prospectors that are bringing equipment in from out of state. And we expect this to increase with the ban in Oregon. We may see something similar to what California saw, or what Oregon saw when California put the moratorium in place. However, because if they're working in the pamphlet, we don't know how often this occurs. So currently, we don't have any provisions in the Golden Fish pamphlet to require equipment cleaning to prevent the transport of invasive species. And the agency is still working on protocols for that as well. So we do have some, in some individual HPAs, we do see the biologists put in some equipment cleaning provisions. But it's not, again, not universal. I think it would depend on where they're specifically working and whether or not the biologists require that. Sure.
I think that's an important point. We have site-specific conditioning authority in the HPA. What we don't have is just making up provisions and using those over and over and over again in different areas, because that's essentially rulemaking without going through rulemaking. And that's why this is a more prominent part of our conversation, in that if we really want to take this risk on, we think that we need to do some rulemaking to do it the right way.
Yeah. Thank you. Good clarification. So we formulated some options that we thought you can consider for rulemaking, and I provided a sheet with alternatives. There's certainly other alternatives, but these are the ones that we kind of came up with that we thought were a good starting place. So the first one would be no change to the existing rule, status quo. And I don't know if I need to explain any more about what that would be. The second option would be to revise the rules after doing more of an investigation. If the commission was feeling like you need to be more informed before making a decision. And we can either do that by filing a CR 101 and going out and talking to folks and then gathering more information, or we could do that outside of the rulemaking process as well. The third option would be to require individual HPAs for section dredging only. This would apply to both motorized and non-motorized section dredging. There are two methods right now. And we feel of the motorized methods that section dredging poses the highest risk because of the work is actually occurring in the stream. They're actually moving stream bed sediments. It's occurring in the water. The tailings are being discharged in the water as well as the wastewater. So the other. Did you want to add to that? Okay.
This is one, too. We heard from you in the past about, kind of what are the risks and consideration about the workload of a decision that you would make. And this is one where we feel the suction dredging piece actually poses the biggest risk to fish life. And for the most part, our in-state, there's a lot of in-state folks that already have individual HPAs for their suction dredgers. Not saying that we have everyone that's in-state, but this would also allow us to really get a good handle on how many folks are coming from other states into this state, and it also gives us a little more of visibility around the aquatic invasive species permit condition piece, as well as some opportunity for us to do even more compliance and effectiveness monitoring of the impacts or documentation of what we thought were impacts that might not be as impactful.
And the fourth option is to require an individual HPA for all motorized methods. So this would include methods that are mainly operated from upland, such as a high banker or mini high banker, where they're withdrawing water from the stream to basically sort their materials. And then they're discharging the water back into the stream after they're filtering it to make sure that's required in the pamphlet that it's clear before it goes back in the stream. It's also required that the intake to bring the water in is screened. So we think that a lot of these motorized methods have less risk than the suction dredging does. Because of where the work is occurring and the size of the equipment, the last option would be to revise the rules to require individual HPAs for all methods that are not defined as small scale mineral prospecting and mining in the statute, This definition includes some motorized equipment. The only thing that there's non-motorized sluices, but motorized pans, for example, or concentrators would be covered under this definition. The definition doesn't include some non-motorized methods as well. So it's more narrow, I think, than the motorized methods. But there could be a conflict if you went with number four and you excluded the motorized methods that are allowed in the statute. So that's something to consider. So that could be revised.
Brad.
Is there any questions about the options?
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Chair. One alternative that comes to mind that I don't see on here, and I'm wondering if you contemplated this and decided not to provide this as an option, would be to revise rules to require individual HPAs for motorized suction dredging and just leave, non-motorized suction dredging out of it. Was that an alternative that you considered and decided not to bring forward to the commission?
It was an alternative that we considered. I guess in my mind, if suction dredging is a concern for the commission, and that such that you want to require an individual permit for it, I didn't see the risk between non-motorized and motorized being all that different in terms of impacts to fish life. Other than I think you can't, with the pressure that you can get from so non-motorized suction dredging uses stream water pressure, to drive the machinery. I don't think you can move as much material with that type of head pressure, but it would depend probably on how steep the stream is and other factors. So, okay.
Another consideration in what we do have up here is if you direct us to file a CR 101. That is where you still have scoping within that CR 101 process before you get to the 102 language. And I think in all of these, it would be our hope that we would be working with the mineral prospectors and other interested stakeholders and the tribes in bringing forward through that 101 process a proposal that meets your expectations.
So for a rulemaking timeline, we could file a CR101 at any time. You can have more than, you just can't have two CR102s open. So even though we have rulemaking open right now on the hydraulic code rules, we could still file the CR101 to start rulemaking for any decision that you make. And the timeline is really dependent on the, you know, kind of the extent of stakeholder engagement, other factors. But we feel like a reasonable time frame, because these are significant legislative rules, would be having this completed by the first of next year. I think the goal would be to, with any rulemaking, would be to have it completed before the work season in 2019. So most of the windows, work windows, open up in the summertime. That's kind of what we see as in terms of a timeline. We're not sure, you know, if this is going to require an environmental impact statement or a small business economic impact statement. So, and those are some documents that are take some time to prepare.
Can I add that to
you?
Yes. The other important thing, keeping again in that consideration that you asked of us, is how do we do the right thing here and minimize the effect on the prospectors. And so, it's, in my mind, it's really critical to have enough time for whatever wraps up to have adequate time to work with the prospecting community to make sure that we're not stalling them out as we get into the windows. So the implementation time frame is really important, I think, to the success of whatever you ask us to move forward.
What's that, you in the front row, Jeff?
I'm not an A student, so I'm carrying somewhere off to the far left.
Questions, commissioners?
That's very helpful.
That was very, yeah. And we do have public comment, so it does kind of look like you, Jeff, though, that first guy. Maybe it was your twin, your doppelganger.
It's just possible.
Okay, I'll call you up two at a time. Steve Jones and Scott Brown, please.
Chairman Smith, commissioners, thank you for this opportunity to comment. My name is Steve Jones. I'm Conservation Director of Clark's Community Fly Fishers, and we respectfully request that this commission bring Washington State into compliance with its own state laws and with federal law. There was ample evidence provided during your panel at the February 10th meeting concerning the need for reforms to existing motorized mineral prospecting regulations. I won't go into any of that again today. I would argue that the issues put forward in the lawsuit Cascadia Wildlands versus WDF&W filed in Thurston County Circuit Court are things that this commission needs to highlight in its consideration here, and it highlights WDFW's lack of compliance with state and federal law. In specific terms, WDF&W is out of compliance with its own state law because it has expanded the legislative definition of what is allowed under the Golden Fish pamphlet to include motorized mineral prospecting, when under state law, that's not, you don't have the appropriate authority in reference to that specific action on motorized dredging. I would urge you to please consider the testimony by Bill Clark in his February 10th memo that was presented at that meeting that explains that issue. Further, WDF&W is out of compliance with the Federal Endangered Species Act and the Clean Water Act. The Golden Fish pamphlet program allows impacts to ESA-designated critical habitat for ESA listed salmon without proper coverage under the ESA agreements governing Washington. There's a no formal consultation with NOAA Fisheries on this issue and with U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service, and no issuance of an incidental take permit that is allowed under Fish and Gold. So you've heard a presentation about legal precedent in other states. I'd point out that as Oregon's rules take effect, that influx of minors that it experienced from California will come to Washington State as well. So you need to consider also the number of permits if the state decides to go to a permit route. Need to consider the number of permits issued. Oregon experienced an influx from 800 to more than 2,400 requests for permit, and I think Washington State should keep clear eyes towards the numbers here, as could be generated here as well. I urge you to capitalize on this brief window of opportunity to make rules now before this lawsuit proceeds, and I urge you to act with expediency within the year. Thanks.
Thank you, Steve. Nick Chambers, please. And Scott.
Mr. Chair, members of the Commission, good morning. As we know that in the past when we came down to testify, we testified that our mining claims only take up 0.009% of the total streams in the state of Washington. And our federal mining claims are all in waters of non-navigable waters. And by the definition of non-navigable waters, those which could be floated by a boat for transporting or using for highways for transporting goods and services. The state constitution states in Article 17 that the state accepted the fact that they do not have ownership of the beds in non-navigable waters. And that's been revisited numerous times since 1889 and has never been changed. And also, under Article 21, Section 1 of the same Constitution, water and water rights in the state of Washington used for irrigation, mining, and manufacturing are deemed public use. As for the litigation that's coming up here between WDFW and Cascadia Wildlands, Resources Coalition has a vested interest in this case because we have intervened on this case as well. And we feel that a decision should wait until this is heard in the courts, because under our RCW 7844330 Section 1A, any person or persons attempting to stop legal mining operations in the state are in violation of the law. And under the current Golden Fish pamphlet, suction dredging is a legal mining operation. For that RCW to be able to be used, it has to be used with an officer of the courts. They have to have a court ruling on it to stop a legal mining operation. Now, when rulemaking was put in back in 1997, when 1565 was signed into law by Gary Locke, it was also stated that it was to make least burdensome on the miners. Our activities since the 1800s have changed. It is not as destructive as everybody puts it out to be. We have FOIA pulled on incidental take or fish kills through the state by a miner using a suction dredge. The letter we received back had no recorded incidences of a fish kill or take by the Department of Fish and Wildlife. At one point in time, there was some emails transferred between members of staff on the WDFW, and this is a long time ago, back when Christine Gregoire was our Attorney General. And she even stated in her statement in the email that we, as the state, do not have ownership of the beds on non-navigable waters. Okay, most of our mining claims, or all of our mining claims, are in non-navigable waters. You can't float a boat in any of those. And with it being only 0.009% of the total streams of the state of Washington, I don't see where it's effective to go into rule changing.
Is all suction dredging done in the claims, or is there suction dredging done outside the claims?
There are a few that do them outside the claims, and I can understand if the commission would want to go and do that to where they're not on a federal mining claim and require a permit. That's understandable. Those are state waters. That's a give me. But as the paperwork that I displayed earlier, I sent an email out for you guys to have a copy of, and also a chronology of the destruction of the salmon runs, dating back from 1717 to present day. One line in that entire report reports mining being a cause of mining because of the salmon being declined, and that was in 1800. One line. Everything else from 1717 to the present shows that it's completely overfishing, the building of dams, and construction on the waters.
Thank you.
Thank you, Scott.
Thank you.
And Steve Miller, please. Nick, howdy.
Mr. Chair, members of the Commission, thank you for the opportunity to testify today. And I also just wanted to thank all of the members of the Commission and department staff for putting together the Skagit RMP that allowed the fishery to open. Today is the opener, as I'm sure you're aware.
And you're here.
And I am here. and I just wanted to point out that there's been some really tremendous public investments in developing that resource management plan that allows that fishery to go into place. And that is also the case with most of Washington salmon and steelhead fisheries, in that there's a lot of public money and time that has gone into those, as well as huge investments in habitat restoration of public money to help recover salmon and steelhead throughout the state. And when we're fishing on those populations, there's intensive monitoring that's required. And even on CNR fisheries, and once we hit our impact limits, those fisheries are closed. There's also been just a tremendous loss of fishing opportunity throughout the state over the past several decades. And most of our recovery efforts are really not working. The Skagit's really kind of a rare example to open a fishery like that. And really it highlights that we need to align all of our activities that are occurring in our streams and rivers with these investments that we're making, because it doesn't make sense to invest all this public money on one hand and all this time and resources and allow certain activities that limit productivity of wild populations, such as suction dredge mining, to occur largely unregulated. And so I know you've heard from us before, so I won't bore you with all the details and whatnot, but TU is requesting that the Commission adopts option number 3, which would require individual HPAs for all suction dredge mining in Washington state waters, so that we can regulate these activities adequately and track them and understand what is going on our rivers, because that is really what is required for nearly all other activities, whether it's fishing or habitat restoration or anything else that's happening in our public waterways out there. And just one point of clarification on the document that was passed out on option number 3, it says Trout Unlimited litigation requests this action, and Trout Unlimited does request this action, but we are not one of the litigants in the lawsuit that is currently pending with the department. So just wanted to point that out to everyone. So thank you for your time.
Thanks, Nick. I hope you get out to get a tight line today.
Tomorrow.
Tomorrow.
Hopefully it'll drop a little bit.
Gabriel Scott, please. And Steve.
Morning. Thank you, everyone, for the opportunity to get my oar in the water here. I'm coming at this from the perspective of someone who does a lot of volunteer work with habitat restoration. I'm one of those people that spends days like today out there in the mud and the rain planting trees and taking out invasive species. And when we do that work, we're required to go through the HPA process, and I think that's totally valid. Despite our best intentions, we could end up doing something that would be counter to what is in the best interest of the overall package. So I think that's fine. So what I've been looking for then here would be some kind of a parity, some kind of a level playing field where, if you're going to require HPAs of people who do restoration work, then I think you should look at HPAs for the suction dredge mining. It's really fairly simple, straightforward, and one standard for everybody here. The amount of work that it takes to do the restoration work is significant, and it's important. And I just would ask you to just level the playing field. That's all there is to it. So that's my input. Thank you for the chance to make it.
Thanks for your volunteer work. Scott Atkinson, please, and Gabriel, sound off.
All right. So I brought paperwork. Is it
There's a dead tree there, isn't there?
And, yeah, ordinarily we try to avoid that, only do it for a reason. My name's Gabriel Scott. I'm in-house counsel with Cascadia Wildlands, and I hear us being talked about a lot, and so wanted to show up today for two reasons. First of all, to share Cascadia Wildlands' support for reform. Just a real delighted to that at the commission's attention. And that you've been proactive and sort of probing about this issue. It's a step in the right direction. It's very much appreciated, and we support it. And secondly, to just provide correct information. I'm not the person to go back and forth about the laws. We're in a court for that, and you all have attorneys, and they're great. But I did want to just, so that you know where things are, there's a copy of our latest filing, our reply brief in the litigation, so that just lets you know where things stand. And, of course, the judge is the one who will say what's right, but that's what we say, and that's where things are right now. Also shared our petition to the Department of Ecology regarding Clean Water Act problems. In a nutshell, Department of Ecology sort of seems to think you were doing their job under the Clean Water Act, sort of, or something like that. And so a coordination on that with Department of Ecology is going to be very important. And so, again, delighted to see that you have noticed that and the need for that that coordination, and that's there. Also would like to say, I grew up in Spokane in Washington. For my two cents, Washington is not California. I would take great pride in Washington pursuing a better approach than that, and one that authentically honors the legacy of prospecting and of small-scale mining and lets people continue to do prospecting and mining. It's not that many people. It can be done in some fair ways, but it needs to be done on a level playing field and according to procedures and science. And the third thing in this packet is the pre-publication draft. This is not the final version by any means, but of the white paper that Cascadia is preparing of science, the new science that ought to inform a rulemaking if you're going to look at suction dredge mining regulations. There's a lot of new science about different fish species. Climate change science has come into play. A lot of new information about mercury. Information is constantly being developed. And Washington should be real proud of the amount of information that this state has as far as the fish runs, timing, the location. It is incredible the amount of quality data that's available, and that ought to be brought to bear. And we can not be California, do better than this. And so thank you.
Thank you, Gabriel. So, Scott, you will finish us up on this part of the agenda.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman and the commissioners. For 5 years, we've been dealing with these issues. Since 2007, we sat down and convened a two-year Golden Fish Pamphlet work group. A lot of these groups that are complaining now were invited and did not participate. We spent 2 years looking through the science with the direction of the agency, with their biologists, the regulations, the federal regulations, the state regulations. The state legislators attended some of those meetings, and we came up with reasonable regulations. In 2009, they issued a Golden Fish pamphlet that was workable. That's been revised due to work window changes that have been made up in North Central Washington. Not only was I on the work group, but I also was involved in the Oregon mining issues. And since 2006, when I started prospecting, I used to be in Trout Unlimited, and I left the organization when it became too radical. We had a governor's work group on Senate Bill 838, which then morphed into Senate Bill 3. Senate Bill 838 had a seven-month governor's work group, and the fix was in. I tried to introduce information that was done in Washington, and the facilitator said, we're not going to talk about what Washington has done, but and then turns right around and says, in California, they did this and this and this, and so we've got to follow California's guidelines. The untruths, some people call them lies, I'll call them untruths, that keep coming from these organizations about the influx, the flood of miners coming up from California and Oregon because those states have restricted mining is not factual. When Oregon Senate Bill 838 put a restriction of 850 permits available, they never sold those permits. They got 689 or something like that permits. So all those people that had been mining in California did not flood into Oregon. The people that did come up from California to mine in Oregon were people that were from Oregon that had already had permits in Oregon and that had gone to California because the gold was better down there. So, number one, consider these options. Are you complying with the intent of the legislators? For the last 3 years in the Capitol, these groups have tried to get bills passed to ban mining, and here we are again. Thank you.
Thank you, Scott, and thank you all for your words of guidance to us. Yes?
I would like to thank staff and all of you who have testified and talked to us about this issue since it's really come before us in the last few months in the work that staff has done. What I'd like to do is make a motion, get a second if one is offered, and then discuss my reasons for making the motion. And I want to do this to open it to discussion. So if you're in agreement. I move to direct the department to initiate rulemaking to require individual HPAs for all section dredge mineral prospecting. The department is encouraged to consult with interested stakeholder groups when developing the rule.
A second. That was number three.
Yes.
Okay, the motion's been made and seconded by Commissioner Keeney. Discussion?
So, if I could start off. We have been looking at this for a while, and I think we've received really excellent information, some of it contradictory from the various stakeholders. And as we've moved forward, it has left us with some and from my perspective, disturbing questions that need to be answered. We're in today a different environment than when the Fish and Gold pamphlet was developed. We have more science on this issue. We also find that there are these differing information that we receive and contradictory that we need to get resolved to ensure that we're doing our job protecting fish. For example, the question of who's really out there? We know when somebody has a permit, but we don't know who's just operating under the Golden Fish pamphlet. And I think it has become apparent that we really do need to know who's out there and where this activity is occurring. And just using the Golden Fish pamphlet doesn't allow us to do that. So requiring that the activity is permitted will give us a much better handle. I resolve this question of, if rules are tightened in the surrounding jurisdictions, does that mean we get an influx of out-of-state people coming in? We really need to have a handle on this. Most of the salmonid populations in this state are listed. Our state has a responsibility of the primary responsibility for ensuring that these populations not only are protected, but they're recovering. And to have an activity that alters, potentially severely alters the habitat really puts us all at risk for violating federal law. We need to get a handle on that. The other question that was presented to us by staff and has come up is the question of aquatic invasive species. This is another area where we've moved forward since the original Golden Fish pamphlet in terms of what we know of the science and the way that these really serious organisms can spread. So I appreciate that staff brought that forward and explained the need for rulemaking to get a handle on that as well with this activity. So for those reasons, I put forward the motion and will certainly be in support of that.
Okay. Other further discussion?
Okay. Yes. I support what Commissioner Thornburn said, and it was good to hear the testimony and the staff report. And I think less options than that would be just kicking the can down the road again. More options than that, I think the staff did a good job of suggesting that, you know, they want to focus in on where the risk is in this option three, and that's where the highest risk is. That's what we're trying to manage. You know, no one knows all the effects, you know, but managing that risk is what I think we need to do as a commission. This does not prohibit the activity. It requires the permit. It seems to make sense in today's world. Science is coming in, different science than when some of these rules were made. And I really respect some of the comments I heard that showed back and forth that, you know, I think it was from Trout Unlimited, the gentleman mentioned that, you know, they respect that prospecting heritage. And yet times have changed enough that maybe we need a little bit more attention to it to make sure things are being done right. And I think that's what this does. And I don't think it's overboard. Further options down, would be maybe overhanded, and I don't think they're necessary. But this seems logical for the time and the risk that we're trying to manage.
Yes.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And thank you, Commissioner Thorburn, for bringing this motion forward. I will be voting in favor of the motion. I too, I do respect and appreciate the comment that some of the proponents of the rulemaking are not looking to have an outright ban on this activity, as we've seen our neighbor in California do. And as we go through this process, assuming the motion passes. As we go through the rulemaking process, I will be looking for ideas from staff and from the public about coming up perhaps with a streamlined approach, something less than a full-blown HPA permit. And that's where I think the input from both the prospecting community and the folks, conservation groups and other interested parties, that will be, I think, where I hope folks spend a lot of time and thought. And also, too, we have to keep in mind, too, budgetary constraints that the department will be operating under. So that's kind of what I'm going to be voting for the motion, and that's kind of what I will be looking for as the rulemaking process moves forward.
Okay, the motion's been made and seconded. I'm going to call for the motion. All those in favor of the motion, signify by saying aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed, same sign. Motion carries. I hope that provides you with some guidance and help. And thank you all for your participation. And echoing what Commissioner Keogh said, we'll be looking at some next steps along that.